If you've experienced a DNA surprise, you know that your emotions can range from shock to denial to grief to anger to confusion to joy and around again. And sometimes it's hard to find people who understand this unique experience. Sometimes we feel a little stuck as we navigate this journey. That's why we created the DNA Surprise Retreat. At the DNA Surprise Retreat, you'll enjoy 6 expert-led sessions to help you process your DNA surprise. You'll eat delicious catered meals, and most importantly, you'll build beautiful friendships with people who understand you, all in a stunning private ranch facility in the Arizona desert. If you've had shocking DNA test results, know that you're not alone. This retreat is for you. Join us September 19th through the 22nd, 2024 in Phoenix, Arizona. Registration is open now. Reserve your space at dnasurpriseretreat.com. I'll see you there. Hello, and welcome to a bonus episode of DNA Surprises. This episode is a crossover with Everything's Relative with Eve Sturgis. In this episode, we chat about our own NPE stories, the importance of humor throughout our journeys, and why we started our podcasts in the first place. I also share something I've never shared before, that I've been on the other side of a DNA surprise. Thanks to Eve for collaborating with me on this episode. If you haven't checked out Everything's Relative, I've linked the podcast in the show notes. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, listeners. Hello. This is Eve Sturgis, and you are listening to Everything's Relative with Eve Sturgis. If you've listened to any episodes, you know how silly I think that name is, but I digress. I am here to talk about DNA surprises, DNA discoveries, and most importantly, or more to the point, I want to talk with people who have discovered as adults that one or more of their parents are not their parents. It can happen all sorts of ways. It happens through adoption. It happens through donor conception. It happens through infidelity. It happens through trauma. And I want to talk about it in all the different ways. So I have this podcast. That's what we're doing here. I am trying something totally different today. Two things, a little bit different, and then also something that I have done before. But you know how normally I come on and I talk and then I say, like, I'm going to roll the tape, and then I play an episode that may have actually happened a long time ago, like a conversation. So I have to separately record my, like, this greeting, this what I'm doing right now. We call it an intro, folks. And I say, like, hey, it's Eve. This is what's going on in my life. This is a podcast. This is what we do. And then this is when I'm going to talk to this person. So today I'm trying something different. I have the person with me right now in the intro. She's in the intro. She is present. I don't even know how to say her last name. Horselt?
Horselt. So hour like time.
Horselt.
Belt.
Okay.
Like belt.
So yes. I have got Horselt. I have Alexis Horselt with me right now. I want to say in the studio, except we're on Zoom. So this is going to be a little bit different, and then I'm not going to roll a tape. Like, this is the tape rolling. It's happening right now. She's here with me. And we thought it would be fun to sort of swap stories, tell each other how our own DNA discoveries have happened and how they've affected us and what motivated each of us to start podcasts. And then we're going to do what we call a crossover episode where we both post them. So if you're listening to Alexis right now on her podcast, awesome. And if you're listening to Alexis on my podcast, awesome. But that way everybody wins. We just thought it'd be fun to mix it up a little bit.
And something different.
Do something different. I'm super excited to have Alexis. Her podcast is called DNA Surprises.
Yes.
She's kind of the hot new podcast on the scene with the DNA discovery genre. she's really good. I have to say, Alexis, I really admire the way that you manage to make more, better, consistent, and different types of content on your social media. If you're not following Alexis, please do at DNA Surprises.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. You've got all the, like, all your, you've done all the things. Like, I just went to this conference to learn about, you know, marketing and podcasts and design and stuff. And they were like, you've done all the things right. Like, you're doing reels, you're doing TikToks, you're doing lives, you're doing posts. Everything is consistent. You have like these lovely colors, like everything. You just like check all the boxes. And I'm like, oh.
To be fair, I have a marketing background. So
okay.
That probably helps.
Yeah, that is totally it. Marketing background. Do you still work in marketing?
I don't. I'm more in the communications world, but it's still kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. Being consistent, having branding. I'm big on branding. All of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And it's fun because the podcast DNA Surprises is a little more serious because a lot of the stories, it's people sharing their stories and their traumas, and it's heavy. And so with the social media side, I kind of like to have fun with it, post silly reels and, you know, things like that to kind of lighten it up, because I think there's both parts, right? It can be extremely difficult and painful. And also, I have to laugh sometimes. Maybe that's just my coping mechanism. But I also think that there is humor in some of the situations. So,
oh, my God. I mean, that's what I've been saying all this time.
Yep.
I feel like we are such kindred spirits. I think you've probably put more thought into it with your marketing background about how to make that balance. Like, I'm constantly struggling with how to encourage us all to laugh about it and also acknowledge the really heavy stuff. And it doesn't make sense to blend it in an episode, for example. I have received some criticism about that, and that's fine. That's fair. I'm just out here being myself. I'm just doing the best I can, but I like what you've done. I like what
you've
done.
You know,
when you see someone do something and you're like, oh, that, right. Cool. So where are you right now?
I am in Tucson, Arizona.
You are? Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
And you are in California?
Yeah, I'm in Los Angeles. So not so far. And sidebar, I noticed on some social media commenting recently that you said to some people, I can't wait to see you in July in Phoenix. Are you going to be at the retreat in Phoenix?
I am.
Awesome.
I am.
Cool. So am I.
I know you're going to
be. Okay.
Yeah. I'm excited to meet you.
Yeah. Excellent. But hey, let me talk to you about something else really quick first. Did you know that I consider myself a casual vegetarian? Yeah, when I'm not making this podcast, I'm also not eating meat. Whether you're a vegetarian or not, you may have discovered non-dairy creamers, and I love oat milk. So I'm going to tell you real quick about Willa's Kitchen. Willa's was founded by two sisters who were tired of plant-based milks that were mostly made of artificial, highly processed ingredients and loads of sugar, rather than actual plants. Plus, their grandmother Willa's recipe used real organic ingredients to create a deliciously smooth oat milk, and they thought, why not bring hers to the world instead? As they started on their entrepreneurial journey, they kept learning more and more about the way plant-based milks are normally made. Heavy processing, loads of food waste, and lots of funny business, including ingredients like rapeseed and canola oil that they didn't want to be drinking or feeding their kids every day. The biggest shocker they found was that oat milk is typically made with the oat sugar, and the best part of the oats are filtered out. This resulted in oat milk with a super sweet taste without all the benefits of the oats. Willa's is made with the entire oat, which gives it a rich, smooth taste and maintains all the oats' protein and prebiotic fiber, which makes Willa's zero food waste. It's not just a healthier, more sustainable milk. It's super tasty. And I can tell you, listeners, they sent me a box, and I'm loving it. Willa's has been highlighted in Bon Appetit not once, but three times. Find Willa's oat milk at willaskitchen.com. That's willaskitchen.com or on Amazon. If you use the promo code Everything's Relative, you get 20% off and you'll be supporting this podcast. That's promo code Everything's Relative to get 20% off. Okay, thanks. Back to the show. Let's see. You've had a DNA discovery. We know that. We know that much.
Yes.
So why don't you just go ahead and tell me, give me the Cliff's Notes of your childhood, and then I'll give you the Cliff's Notes of my childhood.
Sure. So I grew up a military brat. My parents were Air Force and they met in Spain. And that's sort of the origin story that I was always told. They met in Spain. My mom got pregnant soon after my parents started dating. And they didn't get married right away. She wanted to wait. And they got married when I was 9 months old. So this was the story that I had believed. My mom is white. My dad is Mexican. So I grew up thinking that that was my racial background. I've been questioned on it my whole life, but I have two younger sisters who look fairly similar to me.
I was going to say, you look like that. I live in Los Angeles. Yeah, you pass for sure.
Yeah,
yeah. You look Mexican. You look white. Like yeah. I wouldn't question half Mexican at all.
No. But you know, being biracial, it's ambiguous. My parents stayed married. They're still married. Like I said, I'm one of three girls and really never questioned anything about my cultural background. I struggled with feeling like I fit in with the Mexican side, but I attributed that to being biracial and having a closer connection to my mom's family than my dad's family. So really just went through my whole life like getting questioned, are you Black? Are you Hawaiian? Are you Italian? Are you Puerto Rican? Are you like everything? And I'm like, no, I'm just Mexican. This is how I turned out. And yeah, so I was completely blindsided when I found out. What about you?
So thank you for asking, Alexis. My childhood was I was gonna say it was similar. It wasn't similar at all, but I'll tell you what the part that was similar. But I think really what I was connecting to was like just having an origin story that you learn and is the narrative. And people questioned if I was related to my family. But which they didn't do to you, but I mean like questioning sort of like who what are you? And anybody that's seen me, it often had to do with my eyebrows, which now we're looking at 25 years of waxing and shaping right. These guys.
Right.
So previous to that, they were even bigger, even darker, much more prominently featured on my face. Okay, so my childhood, I describe it as my parents were high school sweethearts. And the story is that we lived on the East Coast. And then my parents decided that they wanted to be closer to family. And it made more sense to move back to the West Coast. So then we moved to this small town in Northern California called Petaluma. There were four of us growing up, four kids. And the most important variable to me was that there was on the East Coast. And then for the first maybe 10 years of my life, we were extremely evangelical, born again, fundamentalist, whatever word you want to use, Christian. Mm-hmm. And even at 10, if I say first 10 years of my life, it was like that. The fade out was slow. And my parents, I think, still have redefined their faith in a new way. So they really bristle when I say like fundamentalist, or they get but when I tell people the details of that life, everyone's like, okay, yeah, that's, you know, it was pretty, I don't know what else to call it. I fill in the blank, like fundamentalist. So it was about missionaries. It was about Jesus. It was about saving yourself for marriage. That was the big one. And it was very chaotic. There was lots of other things happening in my family that I don't talk about so much on the podcast, but it was a very, very chaotic and very stressful time, probably more so for my parents than for me. And so as far as feeling like I fit in, I didn't really feel like I fit in, but I attributed it more to my other family dynamics. And then people would ask me all the time, are you adopted? My brother and my sister both have blonde hair and blue eyes. Both my parents have bright blue eyes. So yeah, so those are the things that I look at when I think about my childhood. Of course, we could pick and pull all sorts of things within
there's
there.
So much, right?
Are you you're the oldest of three?
I am. Well, yes, I'm the oldest. Yes, uh-huh, uh-huh. I am the oldest of three that I knew of. There was, and I haven't talked about this on the podcast before, but there actually was a surprise older brother that came from my dad's side when I was 14. So I did experience what it's like to be on the other side of a DNA surprise, so to speak, and how traumatizing that was to my family to go through that. And I think that kind of added this layer of complexity to my own discovery, was like, okay, well, we already went through this and you saw what this did. Why didn't you tell me when I was that age or before? Or
yeah, Alexis, what are the chances? And I guess that's part of that's part of what we're talking about in our podcast, is that actually the chances are very high.
Yes, extremely high.
The chances are actually very high that you've got a DNA surprise in your life. But if I didn't know that, and I hadn't been doing this podcast, and I hadn't been, you know, like within the NPE community for the past few years, I would be like, the chances must be like 1 in 10 billion that you would witness it and then experience it. But no. Nope.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Interesting. So you were 14, and how old was this? Can you tell me a little bit? Do you want to talk
about
that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So what happened?
So my dad, he had dated somebody when he was like in high school, kind of the typical story that you hear a lot. And he joined the Air Force. She got pregnant and told him that it wasn't his, and leave her alone. It's not yours. And knowing my dad, like, especially everything I know now, he is extremely noble, wants to do the right thing. So he obliged. I mean, he was going to, you know, probably marry her. That's probably what he would have done, knowing my dad. But she told him no, it wasn't his. And then never really heard anything. I never knew that this child existed growing up or anything like that. And then when the child turned 18, he came forward and actually sued my parents for back child support. So that's how he was introduced, was through a lawsuit.
Wow. I'm sure I'm not alone. I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So they did a paternity test and confirmed, and it was in fact my dad's son. And unfortunately, like, no relationship really came from that. My dad tried.
Oh, really? But, really? Yeah. They didn't become friends right away when he showed up with a lawsuit?
But you know what? My dad, like, the kind of person, my dad is like the best man. And he wanted to have a relationship with him, but his son just really wasn't very interested. I don't know what he was told growing up. I really don't, you know. But it was hard. It was really, really hard on my family to experience that. And like I said, it made it even more complicated for me in some ways when then I found out that I was an NPE.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. I relate to that element. So what did happen for you with your DNA discovery? What led to it?
So like I said, I was blindsided. I had absolutely no idea. I had put an Ancestry DNA kit on my Amazon list years ago, just thinking, oh, you know, it's a good gift idea. I don't really want for anything, but this is something I'm curious about. So if you want to get me a gift, here's an idea, right? And nobody ever got it for me, which looking back, I'm like, I wonder why.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I like was like, no one ever got it. And I didn't even think about that. Like, oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. So there was like a Prime Day deal last year. And, you know, COVID, bored in the house. I'm like, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to get it for myself. And I did. And I sent it off. I remember my mother-in-law was at my house and I was like, hey, can you drop this off at the post office on your way back home? And she was like, ooh, you're doing one of these. And like, she had no idea, but she was even like, ooh. And I said, yeah, I'm curious about my ethnic background. And that's really what it was about, was because when my dad's mom, when my paternal before grandmother died, she was researching like which Indian tribes we descended from on the Mexican side. And she died before she ever really got a lot of answers. She died in 2009. So I thought, well, I can find out some of this information. I'm really curious about that stuff. So that's why I took the test. And 6 weeks later, I'm like sitting at my computer. I work from home, about to join a meeting. I've just taken a new job. leading a team. Yeah.
And I'm about to get on. Put you in a leadership position.
Yep.
Right before those results roll in.
Oh, yeah. And I check my phone and I see that I have my ancestry results and log on and I see my genetic breakdown first, the ethnic report. And I look and I see that there is no Mexican, no Hispanic, nothing at all. I'm actually African American and descended from early Carolinas African Americans. And I'm floored. I have no idea what to make of this. Instantly, of course, like everyone else, this is a mistake. This is wrong. Somehow they mixed up my sample. So I go to my matches and I actually have a parent-child match.
Shit.
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah. Alexis.
Yeah. And his username is unclear. Like, it's such a typical, like, boomer, like, username. Mm-hmm. You cannot tell who he is based on his username. It was like Damien plus a bunch of numbers or something. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Like, okay, I don't know. Maybe his name's Damien then, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this is a mistake. And I'm looking down the other results and I see my mom's brother on there. And when I saw him, the denial was so strong that I was like, it's a partial mistake.
Yeah. I was like, okay, well, they messed up one part, but they didn't mess up the other part. Yeah.
Totally. Right. Exactly.
Totally. 50% totally mistake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I called my sister, my younger sister, right away and was just like, this is what I found. She told me to call my mom. I called her. And I knew right away something was wrong because my mom's response was not what I would have expected. Mm-hmm. My mom and I always considered us to be very close. I guess I should have said that about my childhood. Very close family, very close to my mom. And she was just like, this is so shocking. Like, just like that, like, just kind of dead. Right. This is so shocking.
Shocking. That sounds like a Siri voice or something.
Yeah. I was like, this doesn't sound like you're shocked. And then I remember saying, is there any way that it's a mistake? And she said, what test did you take? I told her I took Ancestry. And she said, well, from what I've seen on Maury Povich, those tests are really accurate. And I'm like, are you joking right now? Like, I'm sort of freaking out. And with that, I had to join my meeting for work.
Mm-hmm. So, excuse me, mom. Please hold. Please hold. Yes. I have to go be myself in my real life. I love moms. I love these stories of, and I this is not, I don't mean this to be against your mom or anything, but the things that they, who knows? Like, my heart really goes out to them in that moment. So many moms, but I love these stories of what they say. Like, it's just so weird. Like, what on earth came to her that made her think that Maury Povich was the thing to reference, right? Or like,
exactly.
Someone in one of my episodes, what did she do? They were just sitting there and her mom was like, I forget how she said it. It was Lori's episode from season one, but she says, like, if you did have a different dad, like, just these funny, like, ways of, like, this is how I'll approach it. I'll be calm and cool.
Right.
Oh, your point.
I mean, I truly believe, like, if I was writing a screenplay based on this experience, it would definitely be a dark comedy. It would not be just a drama because there's those moments where you're just like, what? That's so weird. So I got on my call. I was completely dissociating at that point. I don't remember anything. I don't think I said very much. Instantly was like calling my husband. Of course, my husband was out of town when this happened, and called my best friend. Did not hear back from my parents, really. They did not call me. They did not come over. They live 5 minutes from me. And my mom sent me a text later that day that said, I talked to your dad and he said he loves you no matter what. You're still his daughter. And we were seeing other people at the time that you were conceived. So it is possible. So
if we make it no big deal, you will make it no big deal. Is that kind of the idea?
It's kind of what it felt like.
We'll be chill. She'll be chill. It's chill.
Yeah. Like, just over text. And I texted my dad and said, can you please come over here? Like, and he went to work. He had to go to work, but there was a long period where he could have come over and did not. And so I thought that was weird. My sisters came over that night and were comforting me while I just kept saying over and over, is this really happening? This is not real. Like, is it possible? And I think I just kept repeating that script over and over again because I could not believe it. My kids, I don't really remember like having them, putting them to bed or doing any of those kinds of things, but I know I did. They're still alive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it may have just been like a pizza delivery night.
Exactly.
Night for movies.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the next day, my parents came over and told me the truth. And the truth was that my dad starts out talking and my mom says nothing. She's just crying on the couch. And my dad says, I met you and your mom at the same time when you were 2 months old.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is different.
That is different. That's than a lot
different story. Well, and that's different than what you had learned. Oh,
correct. I thought I had this feminist origin story where my mom was like, I don't need no man. I'm going to do it on my own. And if we get along, I'll marry you. And if not, and I always loved that story. Mm-hmm. Like, I just loved that my mom didn't just get married to my dad because she was pregnant. Like, I thought that was amazing. And you know, she'd been told to have an abortion when she got pregnant with me because she wasn't married, and she didn't. And, you know, I'm pro-choice and I totally support people that choose to do that. But I, you know, respected the fact that she knew she wanted to have a baby and she was willing to do it alone if she had to. But what the reality was that my mom was in a relationship with someone who was abusive and he was not happy about her pregnancy. And I kind of don't go into a ton of the details there, but she left him, went through the pregnancy alone, and then met my dad when I was 2 months old. And he decided he wanted to raise me. It does take a dark turn.
It just took a dark turn.
It does take a dark turn.
I keep saying, I didn't see that coming. Like, but yeah, that was a left.
I'm telling you, dark comedy. But so here's where we get back to the dark comedy part is, the person that my mom was with was actually Puerto Rican. And I'm not Puerto Rican. I'm African American.
Right.
So I don't know the circumstances of what exactly happened around that time, if it was an on and off again relationship or what. But that man, who they thought was my biological father, is not. My biological father, someone else.
Guys, we've got a double MPE here in the house.
Yeah.
Double, maybe triple if we count your brother coming in on the other from the other direction.
It's wild. So I'm sitting there. This is
rare. We do not see these often in the wild.
No. So I'm sitting there on the couch listening to this story, and they just kept saying, like, we thought you were Puerto Rican. And I was like, well, I'm not.
You're so close to Mexican.
So close. Not different at all. Mm-mm. And I was like, I'm not Mexican. I'm not Mexican. I'm not Hispanic. And I'm actually Black. And you saw me struggle with my racial identity my whole life. How could you have just known this? And they're like, well, we thought you were Puerto Rican. Like, that was just the response. We thought you were Puerto Rican. And I'm like, well, I'm not. And Puerto Rican also isn't the same thing as Mexican. But they didn't know. And I know that that is very heartbreaking for my dad, especially because he really felt like he was doing the noble thing. He thought he was protecting me from someone. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that my bio dad is a perfectly nice person who maybe had a very short relationship with my mom. They don't remember each other at all, which is kind of weird for me. But yeah, that's how I found out.
Wow. And how long ago was that?
This was in July of last year, 2021.
Oh, hello, folks. We are not even 1 year old.
No. Oh, it's fresh. God. Very fresh.
Oh, my gosh, Alexis.
Pardon this interruption. You know something I've been thinking about a lot over here at Everything's Relative podcast? Sex. So let's talk about setting the mood. That's right, the mood. You know, when you want to get intimate. Or perhaps after you've gotten intimate, be it by yourself or with a partner, there is something you need to have on your nightstand. Maud. Maud is redefining what sexual wellness and modern intimacy looks like. They are creating a whole new chapter in the outdated sexual wellness industry. Maud makes modern, body-safe, and high-quality essentials for before, during, and after sex. They have a whole variety of products, like vibrators, lubricants, and condoms. Their products are absolutely beautiful, with a lot of attention paid to design, sustainability, and simplicity. Basically, if sexual wellness has a name, it would be Maud. Honestly, these are products you want to be seen in your bedroom, instead of hiding them. And I don't know if you guys know how ad partnerships work with podcasts, but they sent me some products, and let's just say everyone here at Everything's Relative, everyone is satisfied. One of the coolest things about Maud is that it is a female-led Latinx-founded company. Their founder, Ava, created Maud for all bodies, all genders, all races. Dakota Johnson just joined Maud as their co-creative director. Hello! And guess what? You, listeners of Everything's Relative podcast, are getting a treat from Maud. As our partner, Maud is giving $5 off your first order on all products with the code EverythingsRelative. Head over to getmaud.com/everythingsrelative. That's getmaude.com and use Everything's Relative to get $5 off your first order. Enjoy the mood setting.
So what was yours?
Oh, okay. Quick, jump to it. No. Mine was different in that I didn't start with a DNA test because mine came via phone call. And the like funny details are that, or the things that make it weird is that it wasn't just a phone call, which is weird enough, but it was a message to my husband asking for a phone call about me. So my husband sent me it was a Facebook message. My husband sent me the screenshot and said, "Does this mean anything to you?" And I was like, "No, please call this person immediately." And it was a man who said, like, I believe I'm Eve's real father. And so then we took a DNA test because that seemed like the next indicated logical step to take. Like there wasn't, and I will definitely not say I wasn't freaking out because I was freaking out, but I felt like there was no need to freak out and no need to create like total family destruction or like if it was wrong. If he was wrong, we could just go on our way. But he was definitely correct. So I waited for that before I contacted my family. And I still was very, very worried for my mom because I had mentioned earlier, like we had a chaotic childhood and I was just worried for their level of like stress. It was like, they have had a rough go of it and gone through a lot and faced a lot of challenges. And I just wasn't sure that I wanted to introduce a new one.
Sure.
And of course now, like in retrospect, that's interesting because of course this is a chaos of their own making. And I was still hesitant. I feel sort of like a caretaking obligation to my parents, which I think a lot of people feel and a lot of people don't. But that's just like where I fell on it. Not so much that I didn't start a podcast because I did. Yeah. So that guy who is my real father, we confirmed with him that the information was yes, you are my real father. And then I said, okay, could you just like give me some time? I just like need a minute to take this in. And he said, absolutely. I completely understand. We've been waiting for you all this time. Turns out there's a whole family of people that have known about me all along. And then he died.
Oh.
So I never met him. I have siblings. Do you have siblings? New siblings?
I do. I have two sisters and two brothers.
Oh,
an older sister from a previous relationship. And then after me, he had three more kids.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I should just because you did, you sort of told the story of like your narrative is that this person, my biological father, he did know my parents. There was a relationship of some kind, length unknown, or seriousness of it is like very unclear, but, and it's the story that you hear so often in these rooms about them being extremely young, And my dad, the man who raised me, traveling and working extremely hard as a young guy and being a salesman out on the road. So he was gone for long lengths of time, and my mom being very lonely. And then part of the story, I think, includes probably some like manipulation and taking advantage of a young, naive person. But it turns out that when my mom was pregnant with me, they knew there was a possibility. Both of them knew. And then they immediately were like, okay, so we'll handle this by moving to the West Coast and never speaking of it again.
Okay.
So there's like a lot to explore about like denial. And I mean, I know you're relating to me about denial and about acceptance and about things being what you want them to be and what your brain needs them to be. And there's lots of like details that just don't make any sense. They're like, there's no way he could know. There's no way he could know. But I look just like him.
Like, yeah. You know,
two blue-eyed parents can't have a brown-eyed baby.
Right.
You know, and things like that. So,
and he'd been thinking of you all those years.
Yeah. He says he always knew. And I, you know, I don't, that's a, there's no way for me to know. This, like, it's, you know, I have like what he told me and these pieces I've put together based on, I spoke with his, he had a wife for like 30 years. So I spoke with her for a long time. And then I'm getting to know all these siblings. And so I'm picking up these pieces, but the idea is that, you know, his side of the story is that he always knew. My parents' side of the story is that was just a lucky guess.
Wow. 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 Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, they say there's like three sides, you know, or three sides of the truth. Like there's his side, her side, and what really happened. So,
yeah.
And I don't feel like it's necessary to like put my mom's feet to the fire. She's speaking of crying. I mean, they're very, very, very upset about this. And it's been 4 years. So they're in a much better place than they were when I first came to them, but it's still really hard.
Yeah. I would love to talk to you about that dynamic because, you know, I heard what you said, that you feel protective of your mom and your dad. You still started a podcast, and I, same thing. I still feel very protective of my parents. And one of the things that I have struggled with starting a podcast is that guilt about outing them. Mm-hmm. So to speak, mm-hmm. And, you know, having that social media presence and talking about it openly and trying to destigmatize this whole thing, because I really do think shame is what leads to us, like MPs.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, when you said your mom just sat there and cried, it's like, oh God, I relate to that so much.
Like, yeah. So like, how did you come to terms with, I'm going to be open about this? And I'm protective of my parents.
I don't know if I've come to terms with it. Let me think about that. I went to therapy and I talked to a lot of people and I weighed out pros and cons a lot with like my brother, you know, people that know my parents. When I say that, people that know my parents, only my brother is the only person I talked to as far as who knows. And I don't know exactly how to explain it, except that the drive to do it just remained so strong. Mm-hmm. And maybe there was a little bit of comfort in knowing that a podcast is not as widely aired as, the local news or, I don't know, our like local radio station. Like it wasn't, I knew it wouldn't be, maybe there was a little bit of comfort in that and knowing that the demographic and the audience would be very specific.
Yeah.
And just felt so much stronger about my need to destigmatize, my need to spread the word, my need to talk about it, my recognition of other people needing to talk. That all just felt so much stronger, and they have their own story and their own journey and their own, what do I want to say? Their own understanding of right and wrong and what the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do is. And mine is different.
Yeah. Have you talked to them about the podcast?
Yeah. Yeah. They know, a little bit. They know there's a podcast. they have listened to a few. They want to be really supportive. That is one thing I think that, like, I really wish I could or want to shout from the rooftops. I wish everybody could know how supportive they want to be, which is sort of heartbreaking, is like they want to support. They have supported every single project of mine my entire life, no matter what, no matter if they were terrible ideas or good ideas or R-rated ideas or, you know, like I think it was probably before now, the craziest thing I did was like, I brought the vagina monologues to my college campus, like in college, mm-hmm. and they came and saw it and they were like,
that's amazing.
Whoa, you know, and it was controversial. And so they wanted to be supportive and they are supportive in so much as my dad will say, like, so how's the podcast going? Like every once in a while, but they admitted that after a few episodes, they couldn't listen anymore. It was too upsetting.
Yeah.
I just came out with this notebook, right? And I showed it to them and they kind of leafed through it, you know, and they were like, okay. And it was kind of quiet. I wouldn't say the room was tense, but it was a little bit, there wasn't a lot of enthusiasm present.
Sure. Sure.
So I'm trying to just learn how to hold both things, hold all things, coexist with them. And of course, hoping that I will get more confident about asking them the questions that I want to ask or talking with them about the hard stuff, which they insist I can do, but they get so upset that I can't bear it. How about you? Yeah, you started your podcast fast.
I did. So I podcasted before with one of my friends and I knew that kind of ended. It was just very light friends talking kind of podcast. And I knew I wanted to do something else. And it was funny because that actually ended in July 2021. And then this happened. And I sat with it, you know, for a few months. And then in October, I was like, I think this is it. I think I want to do a podcast letting people tell their stories. I did not talk to my parents about it at all. But I would say at that point, things were pretty estranged between us. Mm. It's been a slow road to rebuilding the relationship. I felt extremely betrayed by them. I understood why they did it. And I get the initial decision. I just wish that they told me when I was younger, just the way that I would expect a child who was adopted to be told when they're young. And so I just decided to do it. And I also jumped right into therapy. So right. That
good,
helps.
Good, good. Yeah. What's interesting about your story and similar stories is that I completely agree with you that I mean, I'm just from where I'm sitting, I completely understand what your parents were thinking. That it would mm-hmm. seem like it would be better if your dad was your biological dad, and let's just create this narrative. But also it's a really wonderful story in and of itself as the truth. Like this man came yes. and he met you and he loved you and decided he wanted to be your dad. So he became your dad. Yeah. Like that is mm-hmm. a wonderful story. So it's too bad. It's too bad that they thought the other way would be better, not knowing, of course, that Facebook and the internet and 23andMe was all going to come around 20 years yeah. later, you know, like, of course, 30 years later, like they, you know, but.
Yeah. And that layer of it, I think too, that who they thought was my biological father was not, is really what complicates it even further, because they discovered then that they kind of robbed me of a relationship that I could have had and cultural experiences that I could have had. In Arizona, there's not a large Black community. And my biological father lives in Montgomery, Alabama. So large Black community there. Right. And there's a lot of things that I feel like I was not exposed to. And in a lot of ways, I feel even stranger about my cultural identity, because now it's like, I felt like I never fit in with the Mexican side. And now I feel like I'm trying to play catch up with the Black side. And, you know, it's funny because I always was drawn to African-American culture, clothing, music. All of those things were things I was always into. It's really funny. My brother-in-law, when he found out about my DNA surprise, he said to my sister, well, hasn't Alexis always kind of been black though?
Okay.
And I thought, it's true. It is kind of true. Like the whole nature versus nurture thing. There's always been some part of me that has been drawn to those cultural touch points. So far as I actually moved to North Carolina with my husband after we got married, because I just really liked it. His mom lived there and we wanted to try something new and it felt like home to me. And then I found out that my biological father actually grew up an hour and a half from where we moved.
Whoa.
And you just find those things and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, the unthought known.
Yeah, the unthought known. I love that. Yeah, absolutely.
I love it too. So yeah, my dad has liked the posts about the podcast, you know, when I do those kinds of things. My mom hasn't said anything about it at all.
Interesting.
I don't expect her to, but I think the way I view it is it's my story. I'm not putting anything out there about them that I would consider embarrassing. I'm very hyper aware due to my childhood about how the things that I say affect other people. I really don't want to cause any additional shame for her because I know that a lot of this is wrapped up in shame.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things my therapist told me that I just love is that some of us have to heal in front of everyone so that other people don't have to.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And that's really what I see what we're doing here with our podcast is we're giving people a platform to heal publicly. We're healing publicly. And hopefully we're supporting people out there who maybe don't feel comfortable sharing their stories, but are really going through it because it's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been through some hard things in my life, but nothing has felt as isolating as the DNA discovery. Nothing made me feel like I was the only person on the whole planet going through something that no one else had ever gone through or would understand.
Yeah.
And of course that's not true, but I felt like sort of on fire with that feeling. And it was such a relief to connect with other people. So is that how you would describe your goal of the podcast? Do you have a goal?
Yeah. So my goal is to provide support for people like us through hearing stories shared. And then through that sharing, to hopefully reduce the shame and stigma associated with these kinds of situations. People have affairs. People have one-night stands. People adopt children. People need reproductive assistance. All of those things happen, and there's nothing to be ashamed of if a baby results from any of those things. And it's best to be honest about that so that these traumas that happen to us as adults stop happening. Like, my goal would be for there to be no more NPEs in the future.
Good goal.
That is my hope for the future. Do I think that it's feasible? No, I think that there will always be NPEs, but it would be great if there were a lot less of us because there's nothing to be ashamed of. Like, we're here. What's your goal?
Oh, I couldn't just like agree with you more and just feel so aligned with like everything you've said, Alexis. My goal has been to reduce the stigma. I really want to talk about shame. And I think one thing that I'm interested in, and I don't know if I focus on it out loud, but I'm really interested in the way that culturally and society and sort of like our patriarchal paradigm has created this system that makes women, not only women the carriers of the situation, but the women end up being the holders of the shame.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to be ashamed of. And why and where and when did we decide that there needed to be all these rules about sex and that everyone, it feels like to me, everyone would pretend that those are the rules we follow when clearly the number of NPEs are showing that that is not the rules we follow. So why are we doing that?
Right.
It's like, I want to talk about that.
Why is it okay for people in their 20s to have one night stands and that kind of thing that we kind of just accept in our culture? But then once somebody gets pregnant from it, it becomes an entirely different thing.
Totally different. Yeah, completely shifts. There's just so many double standards. Nothing makes sense. And the result is that all of this shame is traumatizing people. So yeah, I want to talk about it. So hopefully between you and between me and between the other podcasts that are around, we can form this like coalition of information and like shame killing, shame relieving or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you do with your podcast. I know you said this, you've gotten feedback before that the humor is not good, but I think it's great because like I said, there is humor in everything and we have to be able to laugh. Otherwise, I don't even know where I would be right now if I wasn't able to laugh a little bit. My sister and I laugh about it all the time. And I remember like when it first happened, my sisters would make these just really dry jokes about the situation. And then I'd kind of look at them and I'd be like, I'll allow it.
Yeah.
Just kind of laugh. Yeah. but it is a fine line because then depending on the day, sometimes it would just hit me wrong. And I'm like, I don't want to laugh about it today, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think that's the key is knowing yourself and knowing like when you want to laugh about it and when you don't and going to the appropriate like resource accordingly.
Absolutely.
If you're not in the mood to laugh about it, don't go to the people that do.
I want to hear more about your workbook that's coming out because I'm very excited.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for asking. Some of the rollout has been totally backwards. I'm a first time workbook publisher. So it is technically now ready and available on Amazon. It is called Who Even Am I Anymore? So what I was looking for was some kind of, and this is where my role as a therapist came in to my experience, is that I started to really think about a way that people could have some kind of contained system for processing this experience. And I'm not suggesting that this is all you need, and I'm not suggesting that it will heal you completely, but I think it can be really, really powerful to have a guide through a process. So I created this workbook journal. It's got questions that are sort of open-ended prompts, and then it's got blank pages for you to write. And I really encourage people to not think about it too hard and to write whatever comes to mind. Or if they can't write, they can scribble. Or if they can't scribble, they can get some crayons out and draw something. But I really believe in containment. And this is a tool that we don't have in the NP community, haven't had until now. So I thought it was really important to create one and start creating the resources that I felt I wished I'd had in my first moments and also that I wish for my fellow community.
I love it.
I really concentrated on having the questions. They're in a particular order. It's okay if you go out of order. You can do it by yourself or you can do it with groups. I encourage people to create groups around it and meet weekly or biweekly and discuss like what they wrote or how it felt or what they think. And so I am trying to be just brave about being proud about it.
You should be proud of it. I think almost every NPE I've had on the podcast so far has said, there's no book, there's no guidebook. And with the addition of this workbook, and then I know Leanne Hay, she has a book as well, which has a ton of resources in it. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see more resources.
Yeah. Well, I just love what you're doing with the way your podcast offers this platform. And then I love all the ways that you're having fun with it. I think the more of us that talk about it, the better. Like, bring it on, podcasts. Let's all get to all our audiences.
I'd lifts all boats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there is room. There's room for all of us. There's room for all of us. It was so fun getting to talk to you. And I get to see you in, I'll see you in July.
Yes, I'll see you.
Before I see some of my friends, like my lifelong friends, I never see anymore because everybody's too busy, but I will see you in July. Yeah. Oh, and give me, yeah, throw me your handles. What do you, if people want to follow you on Instagram, go to your website, like what do they do? Like everybody subscribe to DNA Surprises.
DNA Surprises is the name of the podcast. It's wherever you listen to podcasts. DNASurprisesPodcast.com if you want to see the website. And then my handle on Instagram is DNA Surprises. And that's where you can see some of the reels and things that Eve was talking about earlier. I'm also on TikTok at DNA Surprises. And I recently started a Facebook community for podcast guests and listeners. So if you go to DNA Surprises Podcast Community on Facebook, you're welcome to join. It's a little smaller of a group than some of the really large ones. So it's can be less scary, but we're all really supportive in there. And it's just really been awesome to see the community growing. So, and what about you for anyone who's listening on DNA Surprises?
Right.
Where can people find you?
I am at everythingsrelativepodcast.com. My Instagram and Facebook are both everythingsrelativepodcast. My Twitter is Eve Sturgis, but you can find it with Everything's Relative podcast as well. I think those are all the ways to get a hold of me. I also have a website, evesturgis.la, which will get you to all those places as well.
Great.
Yeah.
Awesome. This is cool. Awesome.
And I'm so glad. And your podcast is available on all the listening platforms.
All the listening platforms. Mine too. Apple, okay. Spotify. Yeah. Everywhere,
whatever they are. Yes. It's like I always hear one and I'm like, oh, okay, great, I'm glad I'm there too. Cool, great. Yeah, this was so fun.
Yes,
this is so fun. I'm really excited about the episode, but also just about hanging out with you.
After all that, I forgot to include an outro with me and Alexis, so I have to come on here now and do it just like I used to. Oh well, so much for trying to make my life easier. I obviously had such a nice time talking with Alexis. And actually, when you are listening to this episode, the weekend it's released, she and I will be together in real life, in real time, at the Hyrith Hope and Healing Retreat in Phoenix, Arizona. It's the same weekend. I bet we're having a really fun time right now. I hope we're having some cold drinks because it's going to be really hot. I hope that you are having fun wherever you are. I hope you're enjoying this podcast. I hope you are recovered from last weekend, 4th of July holiday. No matter how you feel about America, I hope that you're thinking about how to vote, make the change you want to see in the world. One way to vote for this podcast, Everything's Relative with Eve Sturgis, is to give it a star rating on your listening platform and write a review. Such an impactful way to support me, if you can believe it. And now that you know about DNA Surprises with Alexis, go find that podcast. Make sure you're subscribed. Give her a review too. Okay, everyone, come back soon. Thank you so much for spending some time with me to talk about the issues surrounding the lives of those of us who have experienced DNA discoveries. I hope you've learned something. I hope you have laughed. I hope you feel comforted. I hope you feel like listening to another episode soon. I'll be back. I'm Eve Sturgis. This is Everything's Relative. Bye-bye.
Everything's Relative with Eve Sturgis is produced by Eve Sturgis and